Today is going to be different. Nearly a year ago, we did a series, Behind the Mask. And we talked about the fact that as people, and especially as Christians, we can get really good at pretending to be somebody we're not. And we put on a mask. But it's our real selves that's behind the mask. And that is going to fall. So we decided that this spring we would do the series Unmasked. So go ahead and hit that next slide there, Crystal. So we're going to put away the mask. And we're going to look at ways over the next 4 weeks how we can put away the mask and we can learn to live together in meaningful ways. Matthew 22, 37 to 39. And just reading snippets of this. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Our walk as Christians is marked by those two realities. Jesus said, take everything that's written, boom, it settles right there. So when we don't get along with each other, when we don't get along with Him, we're screwing everything up. Doesn't matter how many verses we can spout, or how many creeds we can recite, or how many things we can pound our fist on and say we're certain of. We're certainly off the mark if we're missing those two things, Jesus said. So how do we know we're right on anything else? Paul, when he wrote to the church in Corinth, said this, if I speak in the tongues of men and angels but have not love, I am a noising gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have a prophetic powers and understand all the mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. Paul says you can get it all right except love, and you got it all wrong. It's nothing. The impact you make in the world, the impact you make in your family, the impact you make in your gospel footprint, those people around you that God has put you around to speak into their lives, means nothing. So how do we do this? I mean, it's amazing that sometimes Christians are the nastiest people. And we've got to learn to get this right if we're going to be people God uses to transform. And we've got to get this right if we're going to be people who are transformed by God. And so we've got to figure this out. The beauty is, 1 John tells us that Jesus is our covering for every time we screw up. And so that's a wonderful thing. So as we go into this series over the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about taking off the mask, becoming unmasked, getting relationships right from the start is how we're going to begin this morning. And because this is a relationship series, we thought it could be cool to... I thought it would be cool to do it in tandem. So are you ready, dear?
Loving others well is anchored in our love of our loving God. John 15, verses 4 and 5 say, abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. We don't love well on our own. All the natural ugliness, that sin that is in us, comes rising to the top as soon as things don't go the way we want. The only way that we will be successful is by having it anchored in God's love for us. And in 1 John 2, 10 and 11, it says, the person loving a brother or sister stays in the light, and there is nothing in the light that causes a person to stumble. But the person who hates a brother or sister is in the darkness and lives in the darkness and doesn't know where to go because the darkness blinds the eyes. Our relationships with one another speak volumes of where we are, whether we're in the light or whether we're in the dark. So in those relationships, through that love that we receive from Christ, we are showing others where we are. So why is loving God required for loving each other? It's not. The reality is, it comes down to the resources we have. Each one of us came with different personalities, different histories, different experiences that gave us resources when it comes to loving other people. But the only difference between us and the rest of the world, who also came with all those same things, is the love of God that reinforces and enhances everything that we bring to the table. He takes whatever you've been given by him and raises it up a level. For Greg and I, one of the comments that the gentleman who married us and did our premarital counseling did, he laughed because we are like polar opposites, but our histories are very similar. We were both raised in homes where my parents married. They did not come to Christ until after my oldest brother was born. But once they came to Christ, it altered how they interacted. Now, my dad still was not the easiest man to live with, and my mom was still insecure. Insecurities that had come from way back in her youth. But they strove to work on that relationship with each other. But one of the things that will always stick in my mind is, you could not come home late at our house. Because if you came home between 2 and 3, you were going to catch mom and dad downstairs doing their devotions in the middle of the night. Because in a family of 11 kids, there wasn't time during the day to do devotions. So they would get up in the middle of the night, have their devotions, and that was part of what sustained them. It was also part of what got most of us in trouble, but that's beside the point.
As Marcia said, our families, when I think back on my family and where I would be, both of my mom and my dad grew up with alcoholic fathers. And their home lives were not easy. In a time and day when divorce was not common, my dad's dad walked out when he was 17. So he became the man of the home. He went off to World War II. Came back from World War II. Just before he left, he started an internship and an apprenticeship as a mason. Went off to fight in World War II, came home, and met my mom, got married, and then they wanted to build a home. And so he dug a cellar hole by hand with a shovel, went to the bank, and he couldn't get a loan because he was only an apprentice mason. He was not a mason. So early in their married life, he left his family. They went off and started on their own, went to one of his uncles and lived with his uncle, and finally got his license as a full mason and began to work. But so many things in their lives did not go right. Their first son was born mentally disabled in a day and age when they didn't know how to handle that. Although, because it was their first child, they didn't realize it until their second child came along and he was learning at a whole different curve. And their third child, my oldest sister, was born mentally disabled. It was sometime from the time that she was born until the time that my next brother was born, that they got saved. And through that whole time, they went through all kinds of turmoil and difficulty because my dad was trying to be, he was a great mason, but a horrible businessman. So they had all kinds of financial debt because he wouldn't make people pay. So all of these things going on, and I look at all the relational skills they had, and they didn't have anything. But then they got connected to Christ. They began to grow in Christ. They got connected to a church family. They began to grow in that family. And things began to change. Now, just like Marcia said about her dad, my parents never became perfect. My mom struggled with depression for 9 years. So bad she made multiple stays in the psychiatric ward of the hospital. 3 attempted suicides. So when I look at that and I think, what kind of skills did they have and what kind of resources did they bring to the table to raise 6 kids at the same time that they took care of my dad's mom who had Alzheimer's? You know, you wonder, but God. You know, when God steps in, things that on the surface look like they're going to be nothing but a disaster become a beautiful thing in God's hand. That's why we have so much more when we realize how much we have in our walk with God and the deeper we go with it. A growing loving relationship with God moves us from the limits of our own experience and expertise and backgrounds to the unlimited power of God and His grace. And it makes a world of difference. Second reality that we need to get from the beginning is that relational transformation begins with falling in love and staying in love. Falling in love and staying in love. This is true in our personal relationships as much as it is in our relationship with God. Relationship begins with a common connection. If that connection is repeated with increased frequency, maybe a friendship develops, at least the possibilities there. You know, you find somebody, you find something in common, you do it together a couple of times, you begin to develop a friendship, a relationship, things begin to grow and move forward from there. But the quality of that friendship is tied to those continued connections and the meaningfulness of those continued connections. And it's hard sometimes to do that. You know, when you can't just get together and be in the same room. That's especially true within a church family. It's one of the reasons why we went to the name tags, so we could get to know each other. You know, it's not just about showing up and being in the same location so we can check in on Facebook and say we were here. You know, it's about checking in with each other while we're here, not being the first one out the door. I mean, I know life is busy. You guys have a life, probably. You have things to go to after this. I think it's so cool when we finish the learning community afterwards, we're rarely out of here before 1:30 because we're just hanging with people. And you think, well, what about, hey, man, I think that is great. And then we go out to lunch together, so we hang. So Marcia and I get home between 3 and 4 o'clock usually on Sundays. And to us, that's a great thing. Because it's those times together that matter. And it's amazing. There's a friend of mine who is does umpiring with me. And how do you deal with when anytime you hang out with people, you're going to have a problem, right? I mean, because people rub up against each other. So somebody's feelings are going to get hurt at some point in time. And so how do you deal with that? It's tough, but you've got to work through it. But it's something we need. We need that connection. I recently was texting with a guy. His name's John Joy, and we started doing Little League together, and he just got his appointment to do the Little League World Series in Williamsport this year. And we were texting back and forth, and here's the conversation. I don't know if you can read his. His is in the red. But I texted him, and I said, congratulations on your World Series selection. He texts back, thank you, I'm super excited. I text back, a well-deserved honor. He texts, I have to thank you for your help to get me to this point. I say, thanks, and you're welcome. But my contribution was minor. It'll be my honor to watch you. John, I wish we had the association that we had when we first started. There was a camaraderie amongst us as umpires. That was unbelievable. We had so much fun together. Even at our training meetings and talking and just goofing around, it was a relational connection. But that is all splintered across because we've lost contact. And for most of those guys, there's no anchor in a relationship with God. And so a lot of things have happened. And so I text him back. I says, me too. Memories are good, but not the same thing as active friendship and camaraderie. John texts back, exactly. So even in that situation, it was just happened a couple weeks ago. And it was a reminder to me about how important it is not to just connect with somebody. We say, you know, we say love, falling in love. You know, oh, I like this. But staying there, putting in the effort to stay in love.
Getting this in our interpersonal relationships is difficult. But when it comes to God, we tend to treat that relationship differently. Instead of looking at it as a relationship, we tend to look at it in terms of the things that I need to do to please him, or the things that I need to do to get my brownie points, or the things that I need to do, or how I treat other people will get me an extra bonus on my crown when I get to heaven. We lose sight of the fact that it is a relationship. And the whole point of that relationship is not to try to earn our way. This morning, we've seen and we've remembered again, this really has nothing to do with us earning our way. Jesus took care of everything that needed to be paid. We don't owe him anything. He wants a relationship with us. And it's in that relationship that we can, out of freedom, serve and give and love.
There's a passage of scripture that illustrates kind of the difference between the types of relationships we have. Mark chapter 4, verses 3 to 6 says this, "And while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he was reclining at the table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly. She broke the flask, poured it over his head. There were some who said to themselves indignantly, 'Why was the ointment wasted like that? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor.' And they scolded her. But Jesus said, 'Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing to me.'" There's a lot of ironies in this. They're in the home of a leper, somebody who people wouldn't hang out with. I mean, yes, he's a healed leper. But still, the stigma, I mean, think about it. You make a mistake, how many people immediately forget your past? You know, and then this woman comes in to express love because of what Christ has done for her. And everybody is pointing the finger and saying, "What is with this woman? She's wasting this perfume on Jesus." Really? Could you imagine yourself saying that? Oh, man. You know. And Jesus says, "Just leave her alone, guys. She was pursuing hard after, and she didn't care the cost." At this point with the disciples, this relationship with Jesus is still a measuring thing. It's about what they can get out of it. You know, so it's not just about do we hit it off with people or do we hit it off with God, but where does it go from there? Does it go any further? Does it go any deeper? If we're not walking further, if we're not walking deeper, the relationship is only growing in our minds, not in reality.
Some of the hindrances to our ability to love well, distractions and judgments mask our ability to love well. We're pretty familiar with the story of Mary and Martha. Luke 10:41, after Martha complains that Mary's doing nothing, Jesus' answer to her is, "Martha, Martha, you're worried and distracted by many things." Well, distractions aren't always what we think they are. Sometimes, a lot of times for us, they're what scratches our itch. They're something that we actually enjoy. Sometimes they are duties that we need to do. Sometimes they're expectations, false expectations, that we've put on ourselves, or sometimes that other people have placed on us. The problem with the distractions are they cause us to chase after the wind, to not focus on the things that matter, but to get caught up in rabbit trails, things that are not going to enhance that relationship one way or another, and in fact will be detrimental to it.
Well, distractions cause us to miss the thing that's right in front of us. They keep us from being present with people because we're focused on everything else except the people around us. Judgments, on the other hand, get us to fixate or focus on the wrong thing. Peter, as God was beginning to grow the church was always intended to be a multi-ethnic, multi-nationality group. It wasn't simply to be Jews. And so in Acts chapter 10, you can read about the whole story about how God brings Peter to this realization. In Acts 10:15, it says, God says to Peter, "Never consider unclean what God has made pure." The voice that was speaking to Peter at that moment. And it's like, you know, the whole thing was the Gentiles were unclean. And Peter is beginning to have to reach out. He's going to have to go to Cornelius and share God with him. And it's like, how can I do that? How can I go into a Gentile's home? Peter's fixated on keeping himself pure, making sure I do the right thing and nobody can point a finger at me and say, I'm hanging out with the wrong kind of people and all that. Jesus says, hey, all that goes out the window here. This is a whole new thing in my kingdom. It's different than the way you've been living before. And so he gets focused and you know, focus is a good thing, isn't it? It's a nice, I mean, we have to be focused to get something done. But if we're focused on the wrong thing, and that's what judgments do, it gets us to focus on the wrong thing. And then we can't see the real thing. Matthew 7:1-5. "Judge not that you not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." Judgments and distractions, they mask our ability to love well, either by getting us to miss who's in front of us or getting us to focus on something about them that's not right or true. So how do we unmask? It's going to require practice. Marianne is famous for saying, practice makes permanent, right? Practice doesn't make perfect unless you're practicing perfectly. Practice makes permanent. Whatever you do repeatedly becomes the way you are. So we need to practice well so that we can see our relationships grow. Our natural focus, as we saw in Matthew 7, is to focus first on the faults of other people rather than noticing our own. And that gets us off track. And it causes all kinds of problems. You know, recognizing our weaknesses is an important step. We can, once we see, okay, I can be judgmental. Yeah, okay, but now how do I do something from there? I don't know about you, but I find it hard to not be judgmental. There are times we're constantly making snap judgments about people and situations. And, I mean, my kids will tell you, "Dad, slow down. Find out what's going on first." You know. But practice makes permanent. And we've got to work on those things. So we want to go over 3 tools this morning with you. And we don't have a lot of time to spend on them. Please hold all your laughter till the end. And because this is going to get real. So here's some tools that foster open and honest communication, because I think that's key to building good relationships. These are not from us. They actually come from a resource called emotionally healthy relationships. It's a course that we are looking at offering here so that groups can go through and learn how to develop these skills. And so, you ready?
Sure.
All right. First one is taking a temperature reading. And I think this is pretty good because it slows down. When we were first married, we were given some books called question books. And you pull them out on special days like anniversaries, birthdays, and things. And it gets you out of the rhythm of the monotony of the everyday. And it makes you think forward. And those were really helpful. But you can't just do that on your anniversary and your birthdays and have a good relationship. You've got to have good communication and things all along. So hopefully these things will trigger. I don't know if you can see this, but there's a little scale. It goes from blue on the bottom to red at the top. The whole idea is the better we communicate, the warmer the relational temperature. The less we communicate, the colder the relational temperature. Okay, so blue to red. We're going to pop them up here so you can see what they actually are.
The five pieces are appreciation or excitements, then worries, concerns, or puzzles, complaint.
Well, let's do them one at a time because that's why I put them on the slide.
Okay. Appreciations or excitements. Greg, I appreciate you walking me out to the car each morning. On the mornings that you're not there, I fumble with the key, and I'm looking back and forth to see who's coming up the driveway. By the way, I leave the house at 6:15. It's dark.
You're welcome. Marcia, I appreciate the creativity and planning that you put into our family vacations because it makes it so much more fun. I'm kind of more of the spur of the moment, but when you miss when you do that, you miss some things. I especially remember the Werther Carving Museum. When you told me about it, I was like, oh no. But that was a highlight, and I still remember the conversations we had together as a family as we walked through there. So thank you. The second one is puzzles. Worries, concerns, or puzzles. Anytime you have a relationship, there's going to be things that you worry about, concerned about, or things you don't get. In those first few years of marriage, there's tons of those you discover. So here we go. Are you ready? One of the things that why it's important to talk about these, though, is because if you assume something or you're puzzled about something, you're going to create a story in your head as to why it's happening. And if you don't fix that, you're going to have a problem. So, Marcia, I'm puzzled about the fact that when you come home, and it's really nice that you grab the mail, you stop, pull up the van up to the mailbox, and I know it's right there, you just roll down the window and get it. But I'm puzzled that when you pull into the driveway, you always run over the corner of the grass instead of going into the driveway.
I'll work on that.
Okay.
Greg, I'm puzzled as to why you would take the washcloth that I use to wash my face and wash Rusty's face with it and then hang it back up.
Well, you know, the reason I do that is because it's handy. It's right there.
I got that.
So I'll work on either reaching for a different one, or if I use that one, I'll put it in the dirty laundry and put a clean one up for you. Okay.
Complaints and possible solutions. Our tendency is to complain, but not to offer any solutions. And one of the methods that you can use is just four simple words. I noticed, followed by whatever you've noticed, and I prefer. So you're getting it out there, you're offering a solution. So, Greg. I noticed on Sunday nights when you make popcorn that you make the popcorn and the ensuing mess, and then you go and enjoy your popcorn.
I do.
And
the popcorn, enjoy. No.
Sometimes it gets cleaned up that night. Sometimes it gets cleaned up in the morning. And sometimes I clean it up when I get home from work on Monday. I would prefer if it got cleaned up that night.
Okay, I'll work on that. In fact, I'll work on that tonight. Because we have popcorn every Sunday night. All right. Well, Marcia, I've noticed you do most of the laundry, and I am gratefully appreciative of that. But I've noticed that when you take the towels from the bathroom to do the wash, you don't immediately put up towels. And sometimes I rush in, and I'm washing up, and I go to dry, and there's no towels around. And so instead of just taking the towels I'd prefer that you, when you take the towel, you put a clean one there so if I need to, I can wash up.
I will try to remember to do that.
Okay. Another thing that's important for us to deal with is new information. Life happens fast, and changes happen fast, and we just assume that everybody in our connection, our group of friends, or our families all know about that. And so we constantly have to be providing new information. And you don't want things falling through the cracks and slipping out. So I know we've been talking about buying a computer. And I know it's a good chunk of change because I don't like cheap
anything
ones.
Cheap.
I have good taste, and a new piece of information, I think we're going to have to do that faster because we've got some people coming in this week to do some updates on all of our computers for the church and some new things that we're doing here. So I think I'm going to need to move a little faster with that. Are you okay with that?
Like last night?
Yes. And we talked about this just so you know, we didn't just end up at Best Buy last night.
Well, I know I mentioned to you that Ben was wanting to come home next weekend, and I know you're already headed up to Orlando Monday and Tuesday. I can't really go to pick him up on Friday, but I could take some time off of work and take him back on Monday, so it wouldn't be so many trips back and forth for you.
Oh, that would be nice. Thank you. All right. The last one is hopes and wishes. We all have things that we desire to see happen. But if we don't express those, if we don't express things, we're doing that as a church. One of the things about our family conversation dinners is we're going to talk about what is it that we see God doing and what would we like to see him do? Now, we do that in our relationships. We do it in our families, all of those kinds of things. But having these conversations. And when you get to the point where you're free enough to share your hopes with each other, that's when you know the relationship is good. Because if you've got something that you're hoping in your heart, and it may be something mundane and daily, or it may be something really big, but you can't share it with somebody, that's not a deep friendship.
So I'm task-oriented, so my hopes are pretty mundane. Greg, I'm hoping that we can get the house painted this year.
Okay. I think that probably over the next month you and I can sit down and pick a target date that we can work on that.
Thank you.
Well, as you know, I have been working on my master's degree. And I'm really hoping to finish that this spring. And it may mean that I'm going to have to take maybe 2 or 3 days off and go up to Lake Swan so that I can have no distractions and just work and so that I can get that done. Because it would be a benefit to me to complete it, to you, for me completing it. Thank you. All right, so hopefully you're okay with me taking some of that extra time. Well, it may seem weird to do that in a setting like this, but I encourage you to be weird until it becomes natural. The right practice makes permanent a right relationship. You've got to keep working at it. If you don't, life will consume you, and it's a spiritual battle, and Satan plays for keeps. So practice well. The next point we want to draw our attention to is to stop mind reading. It's easy for us to assume. And, you know, when I first was listening to the presentation on this and they were talking about it, they connected it to Exodus 20:16. You should not bear false witness against your neighbor. When I mind read, in other words, I think I know what you're thinking, and then I move forward on that, and sometimes even tell other people about it without confirming it with you, I'm bearing false witness. Even if I don't tell somebody, but I hold it, I believe it, and then I live as though it's true, I'm bearing false witness against someone. And so it's important for us to be able to address these things. So when we think of it, we can never assume that we know what another person thinks about a situation or another person unless they tell us. And so the deal is this. You want to share?
So the practice is called stop mind reading. And the idea is ask permission of the person to read their mind. So in that instance, you're going to tell them what you think that they think. You're reading their mind, just like we all do. We do this internally. We just never ask permission to check it out. So at this point, Greg, can I read your mind?
Yes. Let's not go there.
That was too easy.
And now she's silent.
I think that you think that with the kids getting older and not needing as much supervision, that I'm going to be able to do all of the ministry things that you do at the same pace that you do them. Is that correct?
No.
Good.
I know we're wired differently, and I know you need time, and there are times when, and you've done it, you've come with me on ministry visits and things like that, but I don't expect you to keep the same pace and rhythm that I do. The next thing is the clarifying of expectations. You know, expectations are kind of interesting things, and they are oftentimes the most destructive within relationships. And the sad thing is we don't realize it sometimes until the event happens and we're crushed that there was an expectation behind it. And so we've got to learn to manage expectations. Are they valid or are they not valid? So we're going to give you four ways to know if an expectation you have is valid or not. The first one is, which one is you? Okay. It's me? All right, good deal. Getting our expectations correct here. Expectations need to be conscious. Yeah, there's no slide. Yep, expectations need to be conscious. And that's the thing, is sometimes we have to think through when something big is coming, like holidays, when you're newly married, you know, families do it differently. And you just bring those expectations into a relationship. Same thing in a friendship or even within church. You know, you expect people to think and do things a certain way. And we need to make sure we are clear about our expectations, and we make sure that we're aware. When we go into a new situation, a new group of friends or whatever, what are our expectations for this? And, you know, do I need to express them when something new is going to happen? Maybe that's the best way to bring it out to the surface, is to talk through a situation with somebody.
The second point is to check and see whether they're realistic. If you have someone in your family that is always late, if you're expecting them to be on time, save yourself.
That saved Marsha a lot.
So look at your expectations of others, but also your expectation of yourself. Is it realistic? Can you really fit that whole list of to-do things in one day? Probably not. So make it realistic.
Okay. Going along with the conscious, expectations to be valid need to be spoken. Both people need to be, you got to get it out. If you've got something in there behind, you know, if you haven't thought through the situation, you got to get it out. You got to speak it out. You've got to make sure, you know, we're not keeping them to ourselves. Because then you sit there and you say, well, it's just a hope. I'm hoping. But then when it doesn't happen, you're crushed. But the other person had no clue you were even hoping. And that's not fair to them. So that makes it an invalid expectation.
And lastly, they need to be agreed upon. Just because you had that conversation and you followed it through, but you got through to a certain point, did the other person ever say, yes, that's a good idea? Or did they just kind of sit there? Just because you've laid the expectation out there doesn't mean that it's agreed upon. Needs to be agreed upon.
In particularly with expectations, there are three major relationships that are unique. Marriage, expectations are upfront because that's a huge commitment. The second one is parenting. Talk about those expectations, get them upfront. You can't get into the midst of it. You know, once you start having kids, you can't say, whoops, they're here. And also work. There's certain things. You can't expect. Most of this in dealing with this is interpersonal relationships. So, you know, as we think about it, you know, today's going to run a little bit long, and I know that I'm expecting Becky and the people in the children's ministry to shoot me. So you're on your own next week. But I hope it's been beneficial for you in a couple of ways. I hope you realize the importance of connecting your relationship with God to your relating with each other. Otherwise, you're only pulling from your well, not his. And that may be why some of the relationships in your life are the way they are. The second thing is, if you're pulling from his well, but you're not practicing well, that could be the other problem. You thought because we hit it off, it was going to go well all the time, when it takes practice and it takes constant effort. So as the worship team comes, I'm going to pull a fast one on them, and I want to do the song we did just before communion to close. And it's an older hymn, but listen to the words you're singing and the message this morning. And as you respond to the Lord and as the offering is received, look at that connection card. See how he would have you respond today. And whether you check anything or not, drop that commitment into the offering plate as a response to the Lord this morning.